Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Fightin' Words on the Fightin' Words News Network. Fightin' Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see someone in a uniform, please acknowledge them. Very tough times, both domestic and foreign lands, for people in uniform. Already this year, we've lost 20 police officers and 13 firefighters. So please be kind to them. Well, guys, it's great to have the whole team back together. Chris is on with us, Bob's on with us, Z's on us, and Ty's with us. So it's great to have everybody here. I wanted to start with Ty. Roman Chocolito really dominated his fight last week.
Yeah, I was really, I'm going to be a little unbiased. I was very happy to see that. First of all, how's everybody doing? I hope everybody's had a good week. Really happy to see a kind of vintage performance by Chocolatito, especially fighting a younger bigger guy in Kai Yafai. But Kai Yafai, again, he's a guy who got his title and had about four defenses. He hadn't really impressed in those four defenses, but he was a favorite going in because nobody really knew what Chuck Liddell had left. So he put on a really good performance. And, again, if you watch him fight, it's easy to see why he was so loved and why, you know what I mean, why he was so highly thought of. Even, you know, as he's clearly getting past his best day, you can see the ring craft, the angles, the ability to pressure and throw a lot of punches and still maintain the semblance of responsibility on defense. He's a marvel to behold and a joy to watch, and he's one of the better guys in boxing. So it was really good to see.
Mm-hmm. Z, you anything on that?
Absolutely. First of all, I want to say it's wonderful to have everybody back. What Roman Gonzalez did, Chocolatito, what you saw and what he did was he was in phenomenal shape. He was in phenomenal shape. By around round five, Yafai was getting winded. He was getting winded.
Mm-hmm.
The reason he was getting winded was because Chocolatito, he did him like an older fighter does to a younger fighter. He amped up his work. He made Yafai amp up his work rate with more or less with his foot pressure. Chocolatito, now he started, you know, getting busy as the fight went on. And as he saw Yafai getting a little winded, he really started getting busy. Chocolatito, he still has his offensive arsenal. I mean, was amazing to me. And I agree with Ty. Yafai's not the most impressive guy, but he's quite better than Chocolatito was physically as an athlete. And and so what Chocolatito essentially did, he just stayed in his face. And when a guy, you know, especially younger guys or guys who aren't as experienced, a guy, he'll get in your face and he won't throw punches, but he'll make you throw punches. And people get a little panicky. They start amping up their work rate just because you're right there. So now it's like, oh, I'm got to hit this guy because that's boxing to an extent. But Chocolatito was calm in the pocket, and he got to the pocket very well. I liked his up jab. I liked his up jab because it got him inside. He seemed to kind of jump quite a bit with it, but when he jumped, it was kind of a shuffle jump that got him inside to start tossing those left hooks to the body. And he just capitalized with that right hand. I mean, that was wonderful.
Chris, did you see the fight?
No, I didn't catch the fight. I'm going to have to cancel on this one. I watched Progress and another fight last night was sensational. He looked like Pernell Whitaker come back to earth and started fighting again. I mean, he's a tremendous show last night, but I missed the other fight. So I'm going to have to pass on that one.
Okay. How about your boy Mikey Garcia beating Jesse Vargas last week?
That fight pretty much looked exactly...
Yeah. Go ahead, Ty.
Yeah, that fight looked exactly how I thought it would look. I thought Mikey would win. I thought it would be closer than it... I thought it would be close because Jesse's range and the fact that he's a welterweight. And against elite competition, the best Jesse does is, unfortunately, the best Jesse does is enough to lose. So, you know, Mikey is a good fighter. He's a better fighter than Jesse. Jesse has some physical advantages that you knew were going to give him and cause him some trouble. But at the same time, I think, to me, what this proves is what I thought all along. At welterweight, Mikey's a solid fighter, but I wouldn't put him in with the elite welterweights and expect him to get a win. I honestly wouldn't. I think he's just using Terrence Crawford's name as a bargaining chip. I don't think for one minute he would go over and fight Terrence Crawford with top rank. I don't buy that for one minute. Mikey's history hasn't shown that. He was that lightweight. He had a chance to fight Lomachenko and Linares. He didn't do that. There's a lot of guys at 140 Dr. Chris is just talking about a guy who just came off of a thrilling loss in Regis Prograis. He could go down and fight Regis Prograis. That fight could be made, but he's not going to make those fights. Mikey, at this point, to me, is in a welterweight division because that's where the money's at. He's looking for the Pacquiao fight. If not the Pacquiao fight, you know, he'll take whatever is the biggest money fight available. But he's not a guy who is looking to clean out a division. He didn't do that at lightweight. He didn't stop at 140 to do that. He just stopped there to take a title from Sergey Lipinets. And he's not looking to do that at welterweight. And I think his performance against Jesse Vargas, although being a winning, successful performance, I think that just further proved what we found out in the Errol Spence fight, that Mikey Garcia, however elite we may see him as, he's not an elite welterweight.
What I could say is Mikey's not an elite welterweight. But he did something that I really didn't think he could do. And I see he hurt Jesse Vargas. Jesse Vargas has been down, but he hurt Jesse Vargas. And the thing is, Mikey, he's a carefully measured guy. So I knew when he hurt Jesse and put him down. But when he hurt Jesse, I knew that Mikey wasn't going to capitalize to finish it. But as Ty said, the fight went exactly more or less how I predicted it. Leave it up to Jesse Vargas not to fight half a fight. He's going to fight half a fight. He's not going to give you 12 rounds. I mean, and he's
going to give you
maybe 12 rounds.
I've never seen a guy snatch victory out the snatch defeat out the jaws of victory so easily. But he does that, man.
Goodness.
He will snatch defeat out the jaws of victory every time.
I mean,
against an elite fighter.
He was boxing beautifully. He was hitting Mikey with left hooks. Mikey was. He was counter-punching. He was jabbing. I mean, he had Mikey couldn't do anything with him. And then he went ahead and Jesse Vargas himself. I was hoping it didn't happen. I was sitting there, like, he was boxing so beautifully. I was just like,
you predicted it happening,
please don't. That's a good thing. We did predict it was going to happen. But I was just out there like, oh, please don't Jesse Vargas. Please don't Jesse Vargas. Then when it hit Jesse Vargas. But the guy, he, even losing to Tim Bradley, he had that one good round. He had something.
Yeah.
I mean, but Jesse, I mean, he's just not going to give you, with effort, yes. He's going to give you an effort. But I just don't know. Mentally, it's mentally. His focus, he doesn't have 12-round focus.
You know who had a little bit of that in him, too? But he was just a significantly more talented kid. But he had a little bit of that in him, too, where sometimes he just fought the wrong fight. And that's Hall of Famer Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya would fight the wrong fight. He did it with Trinidad towards the end. He did it against Shane Mosley in the first fight. He was one that something. He did it against Floyd Mayweather when he stopped jabbing. He was one who could get away with it more with talent. But kind of like Jesse Vargas, it's almost like he couldn't live with success.
Oscar, he lost the Hall of Famers.
He's a Hall of Famer himself, but he also had that thing in him where he would sometimes make fights more challenging and difficult than they needed to be. He didn't always adapt the best strategy, and I see that with Jesse Vargas on a less talented level. He doesn't adapt the best strategy, or he doesn't continue the best strategy. Like Mikey never.
Exactly.
It wasn't about Mikey making an adjustment. It was about Jesse Vargas just going away from what was working.
He left his jab. Left it. That's what got him knocked down. I mean, he just left his jab and started kind of trying to almost fight Mikey's fight. And it's just that kind of. I mean, it didn't baffle me at all. Oh my goodness.
He just kind of forgot he was a bigger man.
Oh my goodness.
Just like against Adrian Broner. Against Adrian Broner, he forgot he was the longer man. It's just that's what he does.
Left his jab. Yep. It's always he starts with leaving his jab.
And he's a tough, durable kid, man. He really is. He doesn't always put himself in the best positions to win. He really doesn't.
I just think it's a focus thing.
Hey, Chris, one of your favorites was at last night, Yui Fury. He beat Sauer. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know what, Frank? I missed last week's show. I went through my TV about seven times. I couldn't find Vargas any other fight. What was it on?
It was on the Zone. It was on the Zone.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But my grandson got a rerun of Fury and Wilder on YouTube.
Wilder. Oh, yeah. That's up on YouTube.
He got it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I'm here. I couldn't get it. He watched it on YouTube. Because when I had it on, they said they wanted another $80 to watch it. I said, Albert, I already know what happened. I'm not going to pay $80. Watch what I know already happened. I saw half the fight here and there. They showed episodes of it. I saw enough to know what happened. What the hell would I wasn't paying another $80 just to watch that.
What do you think about the fight, Dr. Chris?
Which one?
The Wilder Fury fight, yes.
Well, I think that the new trainer, Emmanuel Stewart's nephew, I guess it is, must have hung around with Emmanuel an awful lot, because pretty damn smart for him to take the offensive and take the fight to Wilder, take away his waiting there with that loaded up right hand, because he was on his back foot all night and very difficult to throw the right hand off the back foot when he's going backwards like that. And he got him early, and then Wilder never had a chance to recover and reset himself. His legs are going by the third or fourth round, and I don't know what the hell to say. He's blaming it on that uniform. But I think a combination of weight gain, overconfidence, and the wrong style cost him the fight. He definitely, you know, I've seen a lot of fighters over the years can't fight going backing up. Some guys can back up and stop on a dime and throw a left hook, take your head off. He's not one of them, or a right hand. I think Tyson Fury will beat him again and again if they fight a couple more times. You know, and I don't think Wilder should get in the ring with him for a while. Should let everything heal up and get his mind healed up. I think his mind's hurt more than his body. He's got to get a mental.
Yeah, they announced this week that they had signed it to do another fight, supposedly in September.
Well, somebody told me June. Somebody told me June. There's no way in hell he'd be ready by June.
I thought
September.
They had
they
even did the first or the second fight.
Mm-hmm. What's that, Bob?
I thought they had the third fight. I was reading stuff that they had the third fight locked down after the second fight. I mean, or before the second fight even happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say this much about Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury executed the most effective game plan for a 6'9" guy against a shorter guy. He used his range to get to where he wanted to go. What I didn't like, and I said this actually after I heard the weigh-in, I said I don't like Deontay coming in 18 pounds heavier. And exactly what I didn't like happened. I watched the guy sit up there, and I think more than anything, because the first round I saw him let those two right hands go and sort of catch Fury, and they didn't look good. They looked like pushed. They looked slower. And then for the remainder of the fight, I watched a guy on his back foot that couldn't pull the trigger. He had a cock, but he never could pull the trigger. He never could pull the trigger, and I think a lot of it had to do with it's 18 pounds on the guy. That's going to affect you different. Now, I'm not trying to hear the uniform. I mean, fighters, that's whatever. That's part of the warm-up. But that 18 pounds, then you have Tyson Fury leaning on you, No, you have a 270-something pound guy leaning on you. No, you've added extra weight. You can't even move around. You can't move away from him. So
sure.
I mean, it was just kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bob. You know
the Tyson Fury got off first all the time. He threw punches. As soon as he got near him, he threw right hand, overhand right,
mm-hmm.
sloppy. No, he didn't care where they landed because they all hurt. They were hitting them on top of the head, the back of the head, everywhere.
Right.
I mean, he had a great offensive plan. And like I say, I got to give it credit to that kid that changed him around, put different ideas in his head, and made him a different fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's good. I think now that Tyson Fury has his number, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hey Bob, you got a fight coming up with Khabib, right? The UFC 249.
Yeah, we got some UFC 249 coming up soon. You know, but throwing back to the Wilder Fury, you know, you guys are turning me into a boxing fan. You know, I think the first one, you know what I mean? I can't help but watch now. You guys got me all spun out. So, but I think the first one, I don't think. Fury was really training for the first one. At 6'9", a big dude, you're walking through people, and he didn't really have to train. Then he comes against Wilder, you know what I mean, who's got great right hand, great shape, all this stuff, and he's like, wow. You know, so they go to that draw, and they book a second one. You know, the promoters were, like, thinking three fights right off the bat because they knew once a draw happened, it didn't matter who won the next one. They were going to get the money on the third one. So this stuff was already happening. And I think, you know, whether, you know, Fury switched to a coach, I mean, I've been coaching people for a long time, and you can actually be one of those armchair quarterbacks. You can be sitting in your, you know, in your chair and telling, like, all Fury had to do was put the pressure on Wilder. You didn't need to be a great coach to come out and do that.
No.
And also, you know what I mean? Fury, you know, they just told him, hey, go out there and put the pressure on him. Don't wait there and sit there and give Wilder the distance. And give Wilder his setup, you know, just keep the pressure on him. So it wasn't a huge.
And it was actually Fury's dad who suggested that, who was upset that he didn't do that in the first fight. So it was Fury's dad who really first kind of put that in Fury's mind. And then when Fury came back in the 12th round, he said that's when he learned what he needed to do. Then his dad was talking to him. So Fury kind of had that. That's why he sought out. That's why he went to Javon Hill, because he knew he wanted to implement that kind of style. Hey, Bob, Butch mentioned UFC 249. We got UFC 248 tonight.
Dude, right now, this is a huge fight. Like, I wish I had more friends.
Yeah, like Joe Romero against Israel Adesanya. I mean, oh, my
God. That was a great
fight. And Wally Zhang against Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
So everybody's on tonight. Tonight is a entire – I mean, you go – farther down the card, you know, you got guys from Colorado. I mean, tonight is a great card. Anybody that's got ESPN Plus,
Benny Algarius is on it. Yeah, man, I'm like all over.
Yeah, Adesanya, Romero, Jevchenko. I mean, all of these fights are just lined up tonight. I mean, that's happening, I think, at 10 p.m. Eastern. So, the one thing I've learned, you know, moving to the East Coast is, man, you got to stay up late for this stuff. Man, I'm too old.
We're on the East Coast. Yeah. Yep. You got to be up to like 1.
Yeah. Kind of old for it. Like my day, 10 o'clock is the new 1 a.m. You know?
For real.
Chris, you can feel me on that. But, yeah, so tonight's a great fight coming up. Anybody wants to tune in, they got ESPN Plus. I would tune into ESPN Plus, but it's got all the other sports on it too, and I'm not a ball player, so I don't play with balls. I like to fight. So, and, you know, I
have
to if they just had, to, like, a fight network, I'd be all over. But you know what I mean? They got all
I unfortunately tune into Illegal Stream Plus. That's what I tune into, being honest with you. Illegal Stream Plus.
I just have to tease, because all the guys that play with balls get paid more than us, and that just makes me upset.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it
is. However, I'll get credit to golf. That's a small ball. Anyway, so yeah. UFC coming up. Khabib versus Ferguson. Now, MMA-wise, I think this will be the toughest fight that Khabib's ever had to go through. If anybody's got Khabib's number, it could be Ferguson. Ferguson has so many weapons coming up.
Yep.
He is a phenomenal fighter. He has the ground, he has the top game, all that kind of stuff. Versus, you know, I put him at better odds than McGregor would have.
Khabib has said that himself too, Bob. Like Khabib has said that he embraces Tony as his toughest challenger. He said, I'm not the GOAT until I beat this guy. You know what I mean? And he said he's a much tougher challenge. You know what he actually said? He said, you know, I've beaten guys like you know, Michael Johnson and Ia Quinta, you know, and Poirier and Ferguson. He goes, but this guy's he's a different level than those guys. That's what Khabib is saying. So
totally.
I like that he recognizes what we all recognize.
Well, it's the same thing. It's like I can't stop as a fighter. I can't stop giving credit to good fighters. You know, even though John Jones, we've talked about in the past, McGregor, even though they're going off the rails, you know, people have come up to me all the time. They want to talk about the top couple guys they know and stuff. I'm like, well, I'm not a fan of those guys because they don't know how to handle being on top. Now, Khabib, the fact that he's humble and he's showing that even makes him more scary. In my opinion.
I know.
You know what I mean?
He's like a prime Fedor.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like I did a self-defense. I was talking to Frank about that today. Did a self-defense class today. You cannot have courage without fear. All right? It's a yin and yang thing. All right? You got to walk. You know, I've had people ask me, like, what's it like walking to the ring? You know, you're in front of thousands of people or 100 people or, you know, 60,000 people. It doesn't matter. You know, you got to rise to the challenge. And Khabib, knowing, you know, and going in humble, unlike, you know, Rousey and Jones, like, oh, I got this. Khabib's like, oh, this guy's a real, real problem. You know what I mean? And that to me, shows an intelligence above just the physical skill. All right?
Yeah.
Because people ask me about
MMA. That's an emotional intelligence, too. That's an emotional intelligence, too.
Yeah,
I think that's why I like Khabib, too.
Dude, right. And like, people ask me about my opinion about MMA. It's dangerous chess. That's all it is. You know what I mean?
You are
playing a chess game. You have so many different moves. Now, that's why I, you know, wasn't the biggest fan of boxing. One, you know, I put things down that I'm not good at. So, but you know what I mean? but, you know, I can't outbox a boxer. I can't out-jitsu, but I'll fight anybody. As long as I got all my weapons, I'm on top.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I can take you somewhere you're not good, I got you. But if I have to stick to one little spot, like, I'm not as good as
you. Now you're playing checkers instead of chess, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally. Up front.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I need to have those bishops coming from the angles. So that one's coming up. We can jump on that. I mean, that is a big fight coming up. I will be wherever somebody plays that. I will go to that. We just got done with UFC Norfolk. That happened. Great female fight. I love watching the females fight. They always come with the energy. You know, I tell people I fought always as a heavyweight, you know, because the heavyweights get paid more because we got the knockout power. That wasn't, you know, Tyson days. I kind of started fading off into the Holyfield, you know, all that kind of days. But this latest heavyweight fight between Fury and Wilder was the heaviest for a heavyweight in a long time. The middleweights, the lighter weights are taking it, all that kind of stuff. So we got a lot of fights coming up. But tonight is a good one. UFC Norfolk just happened. The females fight with emotion, which is phenomenal. One of the things my guys, when I'm training them, like, you have to learn how to fight without emotion. You can't get upset about things. When you think about it, you're making a wrong decision. You just lost a half a second. If you're, you know, someone starts calling out your mom, someone starts calling out your wife, you know, this kind of stuff, you got to go in there and be a machine. You know what I mean? The focus. And so that's where all the trash talking comes from these days, in my opinion, all that kind of stuff. And again, then we just, you know, we're coming off the results of UFC 245 with Usman and Covington. What a
great fight.
Put together of those guys. And what gets me is they're both black belts or, you know, great jiu-jitsu guys. And they just stood up and banged it out. You know what I mean?
Those guys are freaking NCAA All-American wrestlers, right? And they stood up and banged for 24 and a half minutes, basically.
Right. It's phenomenal. I mean, you can't go along with that. That's why I love
Who do you like in the women's strawweight championship tonight between Vali Zhang and Joanna Jędrzejczyk?
Okay, up until Javanko went against Nunes with, you know, because with that attitude when she started getting on top, that's when I lost respect. Again, it's like once you get on top, Javanko was doing awesome. Then she started talking smack about Nunes, and Nunes served her up. I'm always for the underdog. You know, don't be too arrogant. You know, confidence is different than arrogant. You know what I mean? There's a fine line, but you got to walk that line. Be good at what you're doing, but you don't got to put people down to make yourself feel better. So I kind of lost respect for Javanko, but I still kind of like her. You know what I mean? So,
she lost the title in 2017, and so she, you know, this is her she lost in 2017, yeah. Then she lost it twice. She lost to Rose, then she lost the rematch to Rose. So that's her first title shot at strawweight since then. And Vali Zhang looks like a tank, the way she destroyed Jess Condrop.
A tank. So it'll be good. I mean,
style differential matchup.
Yeah. So, again, take the fighter where they're not good. Again, it's not going to be a boxing match. It's not going to be a kickboxing match, not just jiu-jitsu. If they're playing the smart game, they will take each other where the other one's weakest. And so we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah.
What about the
that's going to be a slugfest. That's going to be – I mean, Romero is on top. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Adesanya, I mean – he's undefeated. Romero's just a freaking beast. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah, he's not human. You know what I mean? So I don't even know. So I kind of got to go for Adesanya on the record, but Romero is forced to be reckoned with. That's that. I don't know what's harder when a immovable
Romero
object.
Can be outworked. You know, anything. Romero can be outworked, but even at the end of a fight, you always felt like even though the guy might have won more rounds, Romero kind of did more damage. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what happens here with Israel. Israel, stylistically, because of how he fights with range and how Romero likes to lunge, stylistically, the style favors Israel, stylistically. Paper is made to burn. So we'll see,
that's the difference between boxing and MMA, because MMA keeps, you know, they're trying to get involved. So boxing will go, you know, strikes thrown, strikes landed, all this kind of stuff, which is phenomenal. And then UFC and stuff, they kind of started, they were given too much credit just to a takedown. And the takedown still
I know. Is. I'm glad they stopped doing that. Yeah.
Okay, right. Yeah. So now not only are they going on strikes thrown, but they're going for effective strikes. So it's not like you can throw 1,000 jabs in a round as a lightweight. You know, as heavyweights, you only throw 10. I'm not lying. Okay? So heavyweights only throw like 10 and one, you know, a couple of big right hands. But I love watching the lighter weight fight and the females, so they fight with emotion. But it's more exciting. But now they're giving credit to the effective strike strong. So you don't just get to throw and score points. It has to be on the button or really work for. And I kind of like that side of it. You know what I mean? But again, everyone's always going for fight of the night because the UFC has so many incentives if you get fight of the night or submission of the night or knockout of the night or so you can, you know, get your normal purse and then a couple of extra bonuses. And that's why I love seeing these wrestlers keep it on their feet, because that's what the crowd wants to see. Because there's a lot of people still that are ignorant. I don't mean that in a bad way. Ignorance is okay. I'm not saying that in a bad thing.
I just think there's guys rolling around that don't understand the
role. But when you're sitting in the stands and you're watching these guys hug it up and on the ground, they don't know what's going on. There is a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, hell yeah. Hey, Bob, you know Dana White said he's looking to put together, instead of going with Jan Blachowicz, he's looking to put together the immediate rematch with Dominic Reyes against John Jones.
I would love to see that. I would love to see that.
Yeah, that's cool. I was wondering if you had heard that. Yes, that's what Dana White has recently said.
Yeah. I mean, Reyes, to my opinion, that was a 3-5 or 3-2. But again, if you don't go to someone's backyard, because every time you go to a champ, you're going in their backyard. It doesn't matter where in the United States you are or whatever. But like, if you go to someone's backyard, you got to get a knockout. And I think he had a chance. And so either we're going to see a ridiculously trained John Jones or an upset on the next one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're either going to see an upset or John is going to try to turn it into a wrestling match, which moves him. It's much more grappling.
Right.
Yeah, well, Reyes, the only thing, I think the only problem he had in the last fight was conditioning. It was simple as that. He did simple conditioning. Around round three, he was beginning to wear out, and Jones started putting the pressure on. And as I said, Jones is tough. Jones is tough.
You know what else? Yeah, he is. You know what? It's funny because when I watch a UFC fight, right, a UFC fight's 5 rounds. And so I'm with you. You know, that fight was, 10-point must system. That fight was 3-2, paying for Reyes.
Yeah.
If there were a Thai fight in Thailand, then John Jones wins that fight.
Yeah.
Even with Reyes up 3-2, John Jones wins that fight. Because the first round's not as scored as heavily, and John is coming on at the end. He's pushing the pace at the end, trying to make contact, and Dominic Reyes is trying to avoid contact. I think Reyes won the fight, but I always, because of Muay Thai and specifically understanding the Thai scoring method, I'm always a little bit more forgiving of that kind of decision. Even though I thought Reyes won 3-2, Because of the Thai background, I see that side of the equation too, and Jones getting the win, even though I don't think he did, according to the scoring system we have here.
Right. Well,
Chris,
and also too, like a couple weeks ago, we were talking about elevation training. So Colorado, again, 5,200 feet, Mile High City, Colorado. We got a lot of good fighters. But then New Mexico, and I said a couple weeks ago, it was like 6,000, but it's only like 5,700. So it's about 500 feet above sea level more than Colorado. Now, these guys are coming in. Now, they gave all the credit to Jones, like, oh, he's a pro, you know, he really worked it out. He paced himself. No, these guys coming from higher elevations have more weight than a lot of these sea level fighters have, flat out. Flat out.
And then especially when you take it's Dominic's first time going 5 rounds, first championship fight, all sorts of shit going on with that kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not to mention being a C-level fighter, C-level Kane.
It makes a difference. It totally makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Chris, your buddy Jamel Charlo is going to come into the ring in June. What do you think about that fight? He's good.
Who is that, Frank?
Charlo. Jermell Charlo.
I tell you, I like the biggest Charlo. I like the bigger one. I think he's the best of the two. Well, I think, you know, he get better puncher, stronger. He got a pretty good chin, too. And the younger one's a better boxer. No question about it, because that's what he knows he has to win on his boxing ability. I like both brothers. So which one is fighting? Jermell or Jamal?
Jamel.
Jamel.
Okay.
The junior middleweight is fighting, not the smaller of the two. And there's talk of him fighting Jeswin Rosario. And Jeswin Rosario is the guy who just beat J-Rock. Now, initially, I know J-Rock has a rematch clause. Initially, it appeared that he was going to go directly into that rematch. But like Butch, I did come across where they said that Jermell Charlo and Jesuit Rosario were in talks, which meant that J-Rock is probably not taking the immediate rematch, might want a confidence builder. So I did come across.
They did have a date set for 6/20. So
I saw that.
June of that's good.
Yeah, I saw it was being targeted for that date, and I was like, oh, I guess J Rock's not taking the immediate rematch. Which, you know, sometimes when you get knocked out, it's probably not what you want to do.
I think it's wise. Yeah. I think that was wise.
Well, you know what? And think about this, right? J Rock got knocked out, and he's the guy who showed you a knockout is just a loss. You know what I mean? And there's nothing, you know, you lose him, all the great flaws.
Yeah.
He got knocked out and he came back, rebuilt himself, and beat the best guy in the division at the time. And what's the big guy's name? Zito?
Her.
Jamal.
Justin Herd.
Yeah, beat Herd. Yeah, and Herd was the boogeyman at the time. He was the ring champion of that division. And you know, like I said, so J-Rock came from a knockout loss, rebuilt himself, and took the throne. So, a similar story could be, a similar career arc could be in the path for him, because it looks like he's not taking the immediate rematch if they're talking about Jermall Charlo fighting Jesuit Rosario.
And I think it's wise, because...
Which will be an explosive fight, too, by the way. That will be an explosive fight.
Yeah. I think it's wise for J-Rock not to take the rematch. And I think it's more or less in the manner in which he lost. I don't want to say he got figured out, but he couldn't do anything boxing-wise. And meaning he couldn't do anything really to stop that man from putting those gloves on him. And that's what kind of got scary to me, because, I mean, he didn't like what he was getting hit with, and he couldn't stop it. You need to go ahead and kind of get yourself back, to be honest. You know, I don't think you should jump into a fight just like that.
Also, Jesuit Rosario was knocked out by Nathaniel Gallimore, who's the guy that J-Rock went ahead and knocked out. So when Jesuit Rosario was brought in, he was a dangerous guy. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
so he's a dangerous guy. You know what I mean? Jesuit Rosario is a dangerous guy, but he was a guy who was brought in at J-Rock. Again, it was a homecoming. J-Rock was fighting in Philly.
Yep.
You're supposed to look good against this guy. Why? Because this guy got knocked out by a guy J-Rock knocked out. So there was a supposed ceiling on how good Jesuit Rosario is without people realizing, you know, he's still a young guy, you know, who's learning on the job. And kind of like Zito, what I saw with that fight was J-Rock came in and hit him with some good shots, but the boy could eat J-Rock's shot and J-Rock couldn't eat his shot. It was really kind of that simple. And then from that point on, the boy just kind of started walking through J-Rock. Now, from a boxing standpoint, he could have done something similar to what he did with Justin Herd, with Jared Herd, where he, you know, tried to smother him on the inside a little bit. But I think J-Rock was a little shocked because the boy had quicker hands than he did. And the boy was a very astute counterpuncher, too. Boy, was he countering J-Rock. And like Zito said, when the boy decided to go get J-Rock, he got him. And J-Rock really couldn't do anything about it. And J-Rock is, to me, the type of fighter, Julian Williams, is the kind of fighter who thrives on confidence. And I think he needs to have a couple fights to build his confidence up. I think he has to feel a certain way to perform at his best. I think he needs to be hungry, and I think he needs to have confidence. And some fighters can fight and not be as hungry and just have enough talent to get by. J-Rock's not that guy. Some fighters could fight and have doubts and still have the talent to get by. J-Rock's not that guy. He has to be mentally attuned. So I think he really does need a couple build-up fights first.
Mm-hmm. Hey guys, we're gonna take a few minute break here. A good friend of mine is the sheriff elect for Sarasota County, Paul Fearn. Paul's with us for a short period of time because his lovely mother is in town and he's taking some time away from that and his business to to just come on and talk to us for a few minutes. Paul is a very well-known person here in the city of Sarasota, county of Sarasota. He's also a former semi-professional hockey player from his hometown in Minnesota. And Paul, why don't you tell the guys a little bit about yourself and what your endeavor is.
How you doing? Start off with, I have over 2 decades of experience in law enforcement on the local level, federal level, and the international level. Was a local canine cop down here in Sarasota. Was a federal air marshal. Been on a Viper team, serving international missions as well. I always said that I would finish my career where I started it in Sarasota County, and I was true to my word. I came back in 2011, and I retired in 2018. And when the current sheriff decided he was going to retire, I had numerous people come to me and say, we would love it if you ran. And so I thought about it, talked with my wife, and talked it over with you, and decided it was the right time. So here we go.
Yeah, Paul, if you take a look at the current propaganda that's put out, it's usually called the annual report, there's a lot of things that a lot of units that are missing from the current administration, closing the South County South County office for one. But I know there's a couple other major programs that are for the being in the heartland of Social Security and elderly people. Older people live in Sarasota. Their grandparents live in, or their parents live in Venice, and their grandparents live in Naples. So maybe you could explain some of those projects that you would like to bring back.
So as of right now, Sarasota is the fourth large. It goes back and forth between the fourth and the fifth largest retirement community in the state of Florida. Back in the day, we had a dedicated detective that would handle crimes against the elderly, that whether it be identity theft or fraud or anything like that, home improvements or unlicensed contracting, all that kind of stuff. We had dedicated detectives. Not only did they take away the offices where you could just go across the street and make a report. They took those away and moved them all the way up north. So if you wanted to get in your car and go make a report of criminal mischief or something that you didn't need a deputy to come out to your house, they have to drive 35 miles up to Bee Ridge and Cattleman to make that report now. And they don't have dedicated detectives to handle those cases with the crimes against the elderly. That goes to a regular detective who already has 32 cases on front of him on his desk. So you kind of get shuffled within that 30-plus caseload. So it's kind of hard to get to teach everyone with the retirement numbers keep going up. I plan on bringing those services back and adding more detectives than just the one that they had previously. With population going up, we're going to need more than what we had before.
Yeah, you talk about the population going up, which means that there's a number of housing developments being built. And as I remember, there was a very high number of air conditioners, plumbing equipment being stolen and resold at junkyards. All of a sudden, I'm starting to see a trend of that come back. Is there a reason for that?
Yeah, the reason is that we got rid of the current administration took the unlicensed contracting detective away from what he was doing, and they just put him back in patrol. So that unlicensed contracting and copper wire theft and metal theft all falls to the regular detective. So not only are they getting regular burglaries and criminal mischief and batteries and things like that, now they're also getting crimes against the elderly, unlicensed contracting and auto theft and things they don't, not that they don't understand it, but they already have a huge caseload in front of them, and they don't have the time or the expertise to get to those and handle them properly.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is there anything else you want our listeners? We have a very large listenership in Sarasota County. That out of our 200, we're at 262,294 worldwide listening.
Wow.
23,000 coming out of Sarasota County. Can you, how about give us a closing statement as to why you want to be sheriff?
Well, there's plenty of reasons that I want to be sheriff, and most of them have to do with the number one job for law enforcement is protect and serve. And protect and serve means protect and serve everybody. With them taking away services from part of the county, you're only protecting and serving a select group. And serve doesn't mean protect and serve a certain group or a certain part of a county or a city. It means protect everybody. The population is expected to increase in Sarasota in the next 15 to 20 years by 250,000 to 300,000. And the current sheriff has said that before he leaves, his greatest disappointment will be the jail, but yet they never address the jail situation here in Sarasota County. And with that kind of a population increase, a 982-bed facility or a 1,000-bed facility just isn't going to cut it. So we're going to have to sit with the county commissioners and hammer something out, because it's just not going to work with the numbers that are coming in and what we currently have. It's not suitable.
Mm-hmm. So great.
That needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, I know that you get a very short time span, so we appreciate you giving us some time here. Not thinking span, but time span, because of the visitors you have and the business
is
running. So
my mom's never been out of Minnesota, so she's this is a little
wow.
move for her. So I got her down here and said, "Oh, this is fantastic weather we have down here, you know." Oh yeah, it's like it's right out of Fargo. It's pretty impressive. I always make a joke that if I was to become sheriff, I was going to bring my brother down and be our PIO officer that addresses the press. So if there was something going on, he would say, "Well, you know, there's a bad call down there. You can't go over there. It's all roped off there, you know." maybe that'll teach him to come out and start bugging us if they have to deal with my brother. Yeah, so.
Okay, Paul, thank
but
you.
Yeah.
For
thank you for the time. I appreciate it, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks for coming on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Good service.
Hey, guys, let me see. One thing I wanted to bring in, Sergey Kovalov and Z, your buddy, Sullivan Barrera, on 425.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
To Kathy Dufour, well, that's right. I don't know Barrett, but yeah. Wow. I don't like Sullivan in this one. I'm be honest. I don't like Sullivan in this one. You can't be a guy who gets. I mean, I like Sullivan's skill, but Kovalev's not Joe Smith. If Barrera gets to him, Kovalev's going to have problems. Barrera is not he's just a step behind Kovalev. Just as far as everything. Now, a lot depends on Kovalev's confidence after being knocked out by Canelo. But I just don't see Sullivan Barrera. I never saw Sullivan Barrera just on Kovalev's level. You know, but I mean, and I still don't see it that way.
Mhm. What do you think, Chris?
Well, what's Kovalev got left after getting his butt kicked by a middleweight? I mean, I can't imagine his confidence, his self confidence, got to be destroyed. So he's not the same fighter we're thinking of 5 years ago. So I think anybody's got a chance against him now. I mean, the door opened when the middleweight beat him. The door opened to take a shot at him. And nobody wanted to fight him 6-7 years ago. Now everybody wants to fight him. I've changed on Kovalev. I think his best days are way behind him. And I think he's just hanging around, you know, for some paydays. And I think you'll hear about his retirement this year. And I don't see why he want to fight any longer. I mean, he's been at the top, and, you know, he's never going to return where he was. And then I think he's going to quit. I think this year will be his retirement year. I don't think he's got anything left. I mean, you know, he's not even punching hard anymore. And he can't take a shot, and that's been proven. So what the hell? They're going to come right at him. Nobody's going to, you know, shy away from him. They'll go right in there and mix it up with him. And I think Kovalev's, he's not going to, there's not going to be very many good performances left in him. That's all I, you know.
I never saw the
middleweight fight. I never saw a rerun of it. But I'd love to see it someday.
My opinion on Kovalev against, there are a couple different things. So the Kovalev that went ahead and got knocked out by Canelo would still beat Sullivan Burrell. I don't know if that's the same Kovalev, right? I don't know what the knockout has taken out of him physically. Just like Dr. Chris was saying, as well as his confidence. The other thing, too, is there were talks that Kovalev was supposed to move up to cruiserweight. And right before this fight was announced with Sullivan Burrell, literally 2 days before I read about this fight being announced, Sergey Kovalev had got arrested for a DUI. So we know he's had an issue with drinking, and he's getting arrested for a DUI, but yet he's got a fight coming up next month. So, you know, I don't know what Sergey Kovalev is going to bring to the ring. If he brings to the ring what I've seen in the last two fights against Anthony Yarde, where he was severely hurt in that fight, and against Canelo, where he was knocked out, he still, like Zito said, would still be a step ahead of Sullivan Barrera, who doesn't crack, who's not as good as Canelo and doesn't crack as hard as Yarde. So he still would be a step ahead of, again, I don't know what he's going to bring into the ring that night.
How about, you have anything on that, Bob?
No.
Hello? Oh, okay.
Okay.
Hey, Bob, I got one for you. What about the big fat Polish guy that's fighting?
He's fighting tonight. Kalnacki fights tonight.
Yeah, he's
against
he's
the Nordic
fighting
Nightmare, Robert Hellenius.
That is going to be amazing. Yeah.
Robert Hellenius, who's like 6'7", but got knocked out three times.
He can't fight a lick.
He's
horrible. And he's got no ring generalship. I mean, he looks like an amateur, raw amateur. And if this guy has, you know, yeah, he's very slow, big slow guy. But he's hard to, he doesn't mark. He doesn't mark, and he takes a punch well. I don't see this big guy hanging in there too long. This tall guy.
Nah, I don't think he's going to be there long at all.
Nah, he's got nothing.
Knocked out
he's
by
got
Gerald Washington.
Yeah, he's got nothing.
They're
promoting it like hell.
Charles Boy, exactly. And he got knocked out of two by Adam Kalnacki. He's
going
to run over this big tall guy.
Even though he can, he's so slow, and he punches with, he throws his right hand out from like a jab while he's square. Then the left jab trip come out. He throws his right hand out. He really needs a lot of school.
It takes his right hand a long time to come back too. He throws get it back fast. He's just not
doesn't
fast
get it
at
back.
All.
Exactly right. He's not. That's what I say. He's fighting a weak opponent.
How fast you get it back? You know what I mean? Because the best time to get hit is when you're hitting somebody. You know what I mean? So breathing, all of that. I mean, the exhale, going over these, you know, basic things with new people. I mean, you have to breathe right. You know, you get these people that walk you off the street and they want to try to play the game. And they're like, wow, I had no idea there was so much to it. Well, because you're just emulating what you see off television.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to promote a guy that really, I think it's a mismatch. They shouldn't even make the damn thing.
Oh, it is.
How bad
it
that
really
guy
is.
It's a showcase.
Yeah,
it's a showcase fight.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like he's been knocked out by Gerald Washington and Johan Duhapis. Like, he's been knocked out by marginal guys. This is the kind of guy Kalnacki steamrolls. But, again, with the division being wide open, Kalnacki has to make a play. This is a step back as far as competition, but it's a showcase. He's going to bring in tons of Polish fans, and he's going to have a highlight reel knockout over a formidable-looking guy physically, even though in the ring he doesn't look formidable at all.
Right. You're right.
Not comparatively.
Yeah, the other one I wanted to bring up was, I know you, this is one of your favorites, Ty, Nedito Denaire is fighting on May 16th.
Oh, man, it'd be interesting to see him fight. Yeah, but did you see the fight with him and the Monster Inouye? Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about a vintage performance. I mean, Donaire tested – I mean, yeah, that's fight of the year. That was fight of the year. And a lot of people thought Donaire was going to get blown out. So he's kind of reinvented himself at 118. He fought the Monster, survived, and the Monster had to survive him, literally. So it'll be interesting to see what he has left. He's like 36 years old, and guys down at that weight don't usually carry their skills into that age, especially a guy we know has been clean his whole career, and Nedito Denaire. Nedito Denaire was, for a long time, the one and only guy who was doing VADA testing. So, like, he's a guy we know has been clean. To see what he's doing at that size, at that age, is phenomenal.
Okay. The I guess the last one I got on here is Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua. I guess we could take a walk around on everybody's opinion on that one. Will it, number one, will it be signed? Number two, who do you think would come on top? Let's start with you, Ty.
Number one, I think Bob and I both said this last week. Number one, it only happens if Deontay Wilder says it happens, because
right.
he has the immediate rematch clause. And that's what Bob and I were stressing last week. If it were to happen, meaning Deontay decides to step aside, first of all, he's not going to step aside for free. He's going to take a step aside fee. But if it were to happen, I would have got to favor Tyson Fury right now. Style's different, so I think it's a tougher fight. He's not just going to drub Anthony Joshua, but he's going to beat Joshua. You know, I still would favor Tyson Fury. But, again, that fight only happens if Deontay Wilder says it happens. He's the one who actually holds the power over that fight right now.
Okay.
I agree. You know what I mean? And we're on our way out, and we're up against our time. So I'll throw that out there with the Fury, you know, they've got money on the line. It's all about money. Like, everyone's got to do their thing. Me and you were talking about earlier before, you know, we started the show. Like, you know, I got more metal in my neck and knees than most people, but I'll take a fight for $1 million tomorrow. You know, and then, you know, our broke-ass friend Floyd Mayweather said he'll come out of retirement in 2020 to do a crossover again because he's struggling. You know what I mean? He's willing, because he only made $350 million last time against McGregor, but he's willing to come out of retirement for a $600 million payoff either against McGregor or Khabib. Now, I don't see that happening, but we can talk about that next week. It's just whatever.
Okay.
Money's money.
Good.
I'll
Chris?
Do it.
Chris?
Yeah?
What do you think about Fury Joshua?
Well, Josh was a totally different style fighter. He's a big man, very cut, very muscular. His stamina is suspect. You know, he's one of them big guys that it's hard for a man that size and with that muscularity is to stay in, you know, to fight a good 12 rounds. I think that Tyson Fury would outpoint him. I don't know about knocking him out. He's a pretty tough guy, and he's strong as hell. Well, he goes about 250, 245, 250. You know, the weight difference won't be that much. But he's a shorter man. He's way shorter. You're going to have to give up like 7 inches in height to Fury. That's not going to help him. I mean, if the fight ever does come off, I think Fury would be the betting favorite. You know, but you got to count him. He's got a chance. He's a puncher. He's a good puncher. He showed me against Klitschko he can take a punch and, you know, come back. He can do it all. He's a great fighter, I think. But I think it's just the weight and size of Fury is too much for him. I don't think he can overcome it. So, but we'll see. That's down the road if it ever happens.
Okay. Z?
I'm going to be honest. Well, first I'm going to start with this. Down the road, yeah, I can very well see him fight. I do not see Deontay stepping aside. Deontay's very prideful, and he's going to go back to work. Mark Breland, he yelled at Mark Breland after the stoppage, but he kept Mark Breland on. So, you know, he's moving on. When that fight, and I perceive that fight happening because Joshua Fury down the line, because it's going to make crazy money and be held amongst hundreds of thousands of people, like in Wembley Stadium or something. But that fight, he really, as long as Joshua keeps winning, you know, or wins his next fight, whatever lineup that is, they're going to be in line to see each other. With that said, Anthony Joshua's not the toughest guy in the world. He's not the mentally toughest guy in the world. I've seen him quit. I'm sorry. I mean, he's a talented guy to a certain level, which, you know, I can speak on that in a second or two. But Joshua is not the physically toughest guy to me, and he's not the mental. He's a tough guy, but not the toughest, and he's not mentally the toughest guy to me either. I just said I saw him quit. Skill-wise, he doesn't stand a shot against Fury. I'm sorry. I mean, he's going to be, like I said about Kovalev and Barrera, he's going to be a step behind Fury. He's good, but against certain fighters, he's going to be there with him or that he can get to. Klitschko, at that stage, could not stay away from him, and he didn't employ the proper things. Klitschko's a certain style of fighter at that age. Fury's not. Fury, he could do whatever he wants to Joshua. He could beat him from the outside. He could stop him from the inside. More importantly, he can out-condition him. He can outwork Joshua into whatever. And I predict that when they match up, Fury's going to stop him like around maybe 9 rounds. Joshua's lungs can't take Tyson Fury.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good. Guys, we extended a little bit here. To be able to cover everything, but I appreciate all your time tonight, as always, and the preparation that you guys do to make this show as great as it has. And it's been a great 15 years that we've been on the air, and love every minute of it. Chris, appreciate everything you do for us, and I hope things. I'll give you a call later on in the week and check on you, but I hope things warm up for you up there.
Yeah. Tuesday's my big day. You know, we'll see what happens. All right, guys.
Right.
Nice talking to all you guys again. Talk to you next
Dr.
week. All right,
okay,
guys. Take it easy.
Take it easy.
It's
Dr.
cold
Dr.
up here, man. Cold up here tonight.
Yeah, it is.
All right, guys.
See you tonight.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, but why don't you give us a brief plug on your self-defense course?
Oh, doing that.
Was that about
title?
Fly, Eagles, fly.
Right? Just did a self-defense course today. Kind of formulated for the Metro, being on the Metro, you know, out in the Midwest and the East or the West Coast, we don't have a Metro, that kind of thing, the subway. So kind of did it with close quarter combat stuff. Got to work with a lot of the, which was great giving back because a lot of the physical therapists that have put me back together at Walter Reed, it came up to take the self-defense course as well. So giving them some hand-to-hand stuff, some COGA, some PPCT, stuff that, you know, the local law enforcement says, you know, I got to plug the law enforcement. It's like earlier we were talking about the corner of Mark Freeman. You know, he threw in the towel. You know, we got to get credit to our, you know, people on the sidelines, our doctors, our nurses,
yeah.
our, you know, this
yeah.
that looked out for us, because a law enforcement, military, fighters, they have that fight or die mentality. They're putting their lives out there on the line for you. So we kind of need those smarter people to be able to pull us back every once in a while. So it's just always great giving back to the community. And, yeah, so we knocked that out today. Hopefully there's more to come on those. And I just want to thank all you guys and, you know, in law enforcement and, again, military and all you fighters because, again, I got your back any day. Thank you so much.
Thank
it's
you.
Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks a lot. Z, you want to lead us out?
Sure do. Another wonderful show. Another wonderful show. I want to thank Dr. Chris, Bob, Kai, you Butch, all of my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely a memory of Bob and Coach Mel. And if anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call.
Okay, thank you. Ty?
Just again, always a pleasure being on the phone with you gentlemen. Wish everybody a good week. Bob is our co-pilot. Coach Mel is watching over us. Everyone be safe.
And I want to thank both of you guys for everything you do for us, again, for the preparation that you guys have and every week. It's just amazing that we get a lot of emails complimenting both of you for your preparation and your knowledge of the game. I want to thank Bob and Dr. Chris for being on with us, and Paul Fern also for being on with us and enlightening us. It's been a great run, like I said, for the last 15 years. And today is actually the anniversary of our very first show. So it's been fun getting this one done. If anybody's interested, on Wednesday night, same time, same place, we have Larry Boa on our other show, Sports Tonight. Larry Boa and Chris Wheeler will be on with us. So I want to let everybody know that. But again, I appreciate everything. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please acknowledge them. It's very tough times, in both domestically and foreign lands, for people in uniform. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffy Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Badinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Henler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longo Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Arthur Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Police Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highland County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Sheriff's Department, Officer Bob McKetchin, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department, and our latest entry, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless and have a great night.
Shem Aleichem. Shek ma yilama Shek ma hezahir ma Son ashen evorat fed Hakuig again ma yilama
Love you and we miss you.